today with a very special guest. She's releasing a soon-to-be documentary called My So-Called Selfish Life, focusing on the child-free movement. And this is a part of a three-part documentary series, but she's directed many other documentaries. Teresa Schechter. Teresa, how are you?
Hi, I'm really good. Thank you. Glad to be here.
So how did you decide to do a documentary on such a taboo and interesting topic?
Okay, well, I love taboo and interesting topics. My last film was on virginity. So I thought, what could make people more uncomfortable? Oh, let's talk about motherhood and not wanting kids. So, you know, I knew at a fairly early age that I didn't want kids. Mm-hmm. It's something I've been thinking about most of my life, but also in some ways wrestling with most of my life. And it's something I've been talking about with friends who were sort of in a similar mindset. And then last year, I thought, I think it's a time to do this as a film. I was looking for my next project, and I just felt like, okay, it's time to talk about this. It had become pretty prominent in the media in some ways, but in other ways, people have been talking about this sort of officially since the 70s. So I'm certainly not a pioneer in this conversation, but it, I think, has reached critical mass in a way that made it really appealing to do as a documentary.
I think you're definitely right about the critical mass. I'm just going to reference a couple mainstream articles that have come out. I know Marie Claire, Vice, have released articles actually that were very, very controversial about women regretting having kids. And that's something that if you ever talked about in the past, you were considered a bad mom. There was even a Quora thread that went viral where a mom went on there and said, I regret having kids. And she was expecting to have shame and be lambasted. And thousands of women actually responded to the thread saying, hey, I feel this way too. I really regret having kids. And that's something along with the child-free movement and the child-free conversation that you're discussing in your film. It's really important. I mean, this is the most important decision of a woman's life, bringing another human into the world. And it seems like there's a lot of pressure, which you talk about a lot, and a lot of haphazard with assuming that this is the right lifestyle for everyone.
Well, I think we've been raised to believe that motherhood is the most important and probably only role for a woman. I think a lot of people believe this, that if you don't have kids, you're not a real woman and you failed in your primary duty. I think there are still a lot of people who feel that way. And I think that it's all around us kind of bubbling up in our society all the time. It's so ingrained in our world that I don't think we even notice all the pressure around us to have children, that it's something that's mandatory. You know, motherhood is mandatory.
But fatherhood, you know, is not.
Somehow, well, you know, like probably everything else in our lives, men and women are treated very differently. And I think that fatherhood is important, obviously, to many men, but it's not institutionalized the way that it's institutionalized for women and women's lives. I mean, until recently, it really was women's only role and only way to have any sort of respect in the world. And I think that's still true in many parts of the world, and even right here in the United States where we live.
Well, you talk about, you think that we've reached a critical mass. And this is something that I've heard from many, many women. And I think that we're kind of in a 1960s style revolution where there was the first wave of feminism, you know, in the 60s. And now there's kind of another wave of feminism happening where women are independent. We're working, we're doing other things other than just being a mom. And a lot of women who decided to have kids are feeling the triple almost pressure because they have the kids. Now they're being pressured to be the perfect mom, the old school ideals. Now there's the new school ideals of being a working mom, being Miss Perfect. And some of us who are childless / child free are seeing this insane juggling of multiple hats. And, you know, I know a lot of women who decided to be child-free just because they were shocked at how miserable some of their cohorts were dealing with these multiple hats and these multiple stereotypes and these multiple roles.
The thing is that, you know, motherhood is kind of glorified and even fetishized, but it's not supported. So women who want to have kids, and many women want to have kids, and people who want to have kids should have kids. But it's really not supported in our society. It's just not. You can be a working mother and not have access to affordable childcare. There are not enough family-friendly policies in the corporate world. I mean, and if you're a lower income mom, I mean, you really, really are working very, very hard, I think, to deal with the lack of services.
I like the name of your film because it's called My So-Called Selfish Life. There's also this, like you said, fetishizing of being a mother. But then the backlash of that is if you're not a mother, you're considered selfish, etc. You know, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of sort of insults and rude questions delivered to people who don't have kids, whether they've chosen to have kids, whether they've chosen not to have kids or they're not having kids because of circumstances. I mean, there is a lot. There's, you know, you are selfish. You're not a real woman. You won't know what real love is without a child. This is your most important job and you've failed. There's a lot, but I think it's more than just sort of being rude or being overly inquisitive about other people's lives. I do think, again, it's a reaction to the society we live in that does make motherhood feel like mandatory. And if you're not signing on, then there's something really wrong with you. And I think that, you know, everyone has their own reasons for not having children. There are a lot. Could be for financial reasons. It could be for medical reasons. It could be for environmental reasons. It could be because you just don't want kids. I mean, I think it's a really valid reason to just say, hey, I really just don't want kids. And I'm not going to be bullied into having them because some, you know, group of shadowy figures decided I should. And that's my choice. I just really don't want kids. I just don't. It's not something that is an ambition or a goal or anything that I think will make me happy, frankly. And that's it. And I don't apologize for that. I just don't want them.
And I think it's very, very commendable that you realize that, because like I said, with the articles that have recently come out about women regretting having kids, it's more important to know yourself and take care of yourself than to bring a poor child into this world because you feel pressured or other things and ruin that child's life. You know, that is something that is really important. I'm going to cite some statistics here. There's over 500,000 kids right now, this is a very sad statistic, that are currently in foster care in the U.S. So that's over 500,000 children that were brought into this world by people who were not as thoughtful as you and either couldn't be taken care of or were severely abused. So I really, really love the title of your documentary, My So-Called Selfish Life, because this idea that deciding not to have kids is extremely selfish. I say people like you who know that you don't want kids and don't want to bring them into the world for whatever reason, you're actually being very thoughtful and caring, not selfish. Because not just that, but you mentioned women raising children in poverty. You know, I commend those women if they do want to have children, but I mean, I also think that that is some form, in my opinion, I mean, you might disagree, of child abuse to bring a child in this world when you can't take care of it.
I do disagree with that. I think the child abuse is our government not taking care of its own and not taking care of mothers and children. I mean, we've been cutting services to low-income people in general. With our new administration, it's kind of catastrophic.
It's very sad.
I think that the real child abuse is the idea that our government wants to take absolutely no responsibility for caring for its own. I think people who want children should have children, and I think they should have the services to take care of them. I think they should have safe environments to raise them in. I think they should have medical care to keep parents and kids healthy, you know, so it's a kind of a larger issue, and it comes under this reproductive justice framework, which is basically, if you don't want children, you should be able to make that decision. And if you do want children, you should be able to raise them in a healthy and safe way. So that's a kind of a larger issue, and gets into a lot of other, I'm rambling now, but
No. I actually agree with what you're saying with some of the poverty programs being eliminated. But what I'm saying is I don't think that it's selfish for you to say, hey, I don't want kids. But many women who decide to say, I don't want kids are called selfish. And I'm saying that there's many people who have kids and they're having them for selfish reasons and can't take care of them, et cetera, or have kids because they're pressured into it and they're mm-hmm. not good mothers or whatever. I mean, reading some of these threads or these articles about mothers who regret having kids, that's their number one thing that they say, hey, I was pressured into it by my family. I was pressured into it right. by my husband. I didn't want kids. And now I'm a horrible mother and I'm not able to be. I'm. Right. This is real stuff. You know, these are real ladies out there saying, hey, I'm a horrible mother. I didn't have the motherly instinct. I wasn't good at being a mother. I passed on a genetic disease, XYZ. But they felt that society and their families and whatever was telling them, if you don't have kids, you're worthless.
So, right. And that's exactly what I'm talking about in the film. That is like exactly that point that women are being told to have children for a variety of reasons that have nothing to do with them actually deeply wanting to have children. And the pressure from families, I mean, I've heard so much about that pressure from their, you know, cultural group, pressure from their peer group to have kids. And there is this sort of sense of isolation that happens when you're the only one that doesn't have children in a society where everyone is having kids and families. So again, it's the kind of thing where, I mean, I don't know if it's selfish on their part to have kids because they're pressured into it. I feel really bad for folks like that. And I just don't think anyone should be called selfish for living their lives the way they choose to. And that includes people who choose not to have children. I should say something about the title though, which is actually from a really, really great memoir called Paradise Piece by Piece, which mm-hmm. is by Molly Peacock, who's a poet and is in the film. And when I was reading her memoir, that line just jumped out at me, my so-called selfish life, which is how she described her own life.
I thought it was a throwback to my so-called life. I was like, oh, okay.
I think it's Molly's throwback to my so-called life because okay. it was in her book. And then I asked if I could use that title and she very graciously agreed. So it is a throwback, I think. It's the book fun. Was written in the 90s. So yeah, it was written in the 90s, the decade of Angela Chase. So I think that there's definitely that connection. And I just thought it was great because it was kind of like, you know, I'm just sort of like, yeah,
how many how many women have you interviewed already for the documentary?
I've interviewed mostly women, some men, who are either, I'm sort of profiling their lives and what their lives look like, and also people who have expertise in this field, people who have written about it, thought about it, worked on it. I want to say I've probably physically talked to about 20 people at this point. They're probably not all going to be in the final film. But I've also talked to, I'm going to give you an exact number, 8,746 people who responded to a survey that I put out on this topic. And I've gotten that many responses and counting from people telling me about their own experiences as people without children. And that survey, we got like 1,900 responses in the first 6 days when I created this survey. So people really wanted to talk about it, like really wanted to share their lives and their thoughts on this situation. So we have almost 4,000 responses now of people talking about their lives. And that has really informed this film, and it's really informed the direction of the film. I learned a lot from what people had to say about their own lives and their own choices. So that's kind of been awesome. And that survey is still live. So if any of your listeners want to do it, it's at myselfishlife.com. So
we'll put a link to it as well on our website. And I did fill it out, and I also tweeted about it. So hopefully some of my followers filled it out.
Oh, awesome. Thanks, Rosie. Did you like this doing the survey?
Did like doing the survey. And I just think it's such an important topic to be clear with my personal story. I am not like you, Teresa, where I knew from the very beginning that I did not want children. I actually wanted 5 kids in my early 20s. I thought, oh, I want to marry a guy and have 5 kids and have the white picket fence. And I married my knight in shining armor. And the more that we were together, we realized how happy we were together the way things were. And we started to question whether or not to have children or not. I did a lot of personal development work on myself, took self-help classes, went to therapy. And I actually, this probably, you know, it sounds like you support people having kids or not having kids, whatever their decision. I personally am morally against having kids, and I think it's the most selfish thing someone can do. That is totally a taboo and very extreme comment, I'm sure most people would think, but I have my reasons. And the more and more research I've done on it, the more I just think it's something that needs to be carefully considered because of the environmental impacts as well as the science. There's so much science, Teresa, which I don't know if you've done any research at all on that aspect of it, but a lot of the arguments that people give are actually not based in science at all. You know, a lot of people say, well, who's going to take care of you when you get older? That's one of the arguments.
That's and such a gem.
It's
a gem.
Not, it's scientifically, you know, right now in the United States, over 1.3 million people are living in nursing homes and you can interview these, you know, poor nurses at the nursing homes, and all these people have kids and none of their kids visit them. You know, having kids is not a guarantee someone's going to take care of you when you're older. And
we talk about that in the film, actually. That's like a big thing. Yeah.
It's a
the
big,
idea that
it's
people,
a myth.
Yeah. Yeah. The people are being threatened with, you know, if you don't, I mean, that is selfish. I'm going to say that anyone who has kids because they're trying to create like
someone
little,
to take care of
you know,
them.
Yeah. Yeah. Seniors aides to take care of them when they're old is pretty selfish. And yeah, there are a lot of lonely people in nursing homes that have a whole bunch of kids.
It's very, very sad, but I'm saying there's a lot of statistical evidence and factual evidence against these arguments that actually are very selfish based. So I'm not saying that every single person that wants to have kids is selfish. I actually personally know people who have kids and they just wanted to be an amazing father or mother. But many people have reasons like that. Like, I want someone to take care of me when I'm older. And it's crazy.
It's a bad strategy. It's a really bad Asian strategy to have kids. But, you know, there are cultures where that's sort of ingrained in the culture that, you know, your parents will live with you, you'll take care of them. I mean, that is, you know, part of a way of life. And from conversations I've had, it doesn't work very well. People aren't very happy on either side. But that's something that's ingrained in a lot of sort of cultural beliefs about, you know, caring for parents. But it's a terrible strategy for aging. Definitely. In fact, there's some people in the film who are this really awesome group of people who are creating a seniors co-housing community.
That's awesome.
And they're designing it for themselves, and they don't have kids. And they are creating a community where they can sort of, you know, care for each other and age in place, which is a really big thing now, you know, aging in place. So I think there are other ways to tackle this. And, you know, having a community of friends and having multi-generational relationships too really helps. So anyone who's planning their retirement now, you know, find some people about 20 years younger than you maybe, and, you know, just become really great friends with them. And I'm only half joking. It is really great when you have friends of different ages, because you have that support system built in. So there are lots of ways to do this that don't involve
having
kids. And that's just a really bad strategy.
I
completely agree with you.
I believe there's a community, I don't know if it's in Sweden, I know it's in one of the Nordic countries, where they actually, one of the causes of the degenerative aging is lack of purpose. And so they are teaming the elderly, you know, that don't have kids and have kids, as childcare for younger, you talked about lack of childcare in this country, but they're teaming the elderly that are retired and don't have a sense of purpose with childcare for younger families that don't have the childcare. And so it gives the elderly a sense of purpose, and also they're helping with the new generation. And then there's affordable childcare, because most of those elderly are retired, so they're not doing anything. So there's other alternative models for sure.
Oh yeah, definitely. Scandinavia's actually got a lot of good models, also really good housing, co-housing models as well, for people living in community and, you know, taking care of each other. So yeah, there's good stuff there. I mean, I think that one of the reasons this project is so incredibly fascinating to me is that when you start talking about the choice not to have kids, it opens up all these conversations about the environment, about aging, about reproductive rights, about capitalism, about nationalism. I mean, there's this whole thing tied to race that, you know,
you gotta further the species, whole show, the further the race.
Right? Yeah, you gotta further the race. And you know, the race is the white race that, you know, people are particularly interested in furthering. So, you know, this idea that white women aren't having enough children or not having children at all is something that comes up over and over again on white supremacist like websites and in conversations, that, you know, white women are being seduced by feminism, which is convincing them not to have children, and it's going to kill the white race.
And liberalism, which is a disease.
Yeah, I mean, all of this, you know, this is all happening, you know, it's happening everywhere right now, these conversations. So this is one of the reasons this film has been so fascinating to work on, because it touches on so many parts of our lives that are affected by the you know, being able to have the choice not to have children. You can only have the choice not to have children if you have reproductive rights, by the way. So that's a whole other conversation. If I can't control my fertility and I can't control whether or not I'm going to have a child through contraception or abortion, then I can't control my life, you know? So that's just like that's a huge part of this conversation.
It is huge. It's a very important topic. And you also can only, you know, make that decision once, because once you have a kid, it's an irreversible decision. So I think it's very important for this film to come out, and also for women to be informed of their decisions, because, like I said, with the mothers regretting having kids, you know, a lot of them said that they didn't know they had another option. That was the main theme that was on a lot of these articles and a lot of these women's, even in the comment section responding. That's what you do. You have kids. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no other option. I just thought that's what you do. I kept reading that over and over and over again. And so it's important for women to know that there is another option than having kids, and also the science behind it. There's, you know, a lot of people cite, you know, like I said, the who's going to take care of you when you get older. A lot of people also cite that, you know, there's nothing stronger than the parent-child bond. You know, you don't know, Teresa, you'll never understand. You'll never get it. You don't know what true love is, XYZ. You don't know what love is, Teresa, until you have a kid. Well, 20% of children are estranged from their parents, according to the U.S. Census. how, if the bond is so strong, why are 1 in 5 people estranged from their parents? So there's other things out there that need to be explored instead of just you're a baby machine or you're not, and you're a career woman. There's other layers of this that there's a lot of myths involved in whether you should have a kid or not. I'm sure some of the reasons, you know, you can probably enlighten me on some of the reasons that are being pushed on women.
Oh, I mean, yeah. I mean, there's the whole like God wants you to have children. I mean, that's a big one. If you're in a religious community, you are expected to have lots of children. I mean, there's in the child-free community, there's something called bingos. Bingos are all the things people say to you to convince you to have kids. So your husband will leave you if you don't give him a child.
I've heard that one.
Right?
Even though my husband is the one who did want kids.
Right. Right. Yeah. You'll never know real love unless you have a child.
I think that one's very, very insulting, because it's not just, as you said, fetishizing motherhood, but it's saying that you don't have the capacity to love, and you're so, you know, you just have no clue. You have no idea. Even though, again, the science says that when you have a kid, you're flooded with artificial hormones from your own body, and then those go away. So,
you know, so here's another one. You'll change your mind when you meet the right man, right? And, you know, some people, if you're ambivalent about having kids or not because you want to do it with the right partner, then maybe when you meet the right partner, you'll say, oh, this is the person that I feel like I can raise children with. So, you know, fair enough. But again, this blanket statement of like, you don't know anything, this guy's going to show up. He's going to like somehow change your brain for you, you know, that kind of thing. The other one I love is, you would be such a great mom.
Yes.
And it's like, perhaps I would be a great mom, but there are things I'm really good at that I don't want to do. I was really good at math and science in high school, and I probably could have been a good scientist, but I didn't think that would make me happy, and I did not go into a career in science. You know, I went to art school. So just because I'm good at something does not automatically mean that I have to, you know, do that thing.
Have you found anything in your research about why it's culturally, first of all, our reproductive rights are very personal. One, what if I was impotent and sterile and I couldn't have kids? That would be very, very, very intrusive. Also, it's very insulting to people who are alternative mothers. So people who are foster moms, you know, you'll never know what it's like till you've had your own kids. Well, what about foster moms? What about adoptive moms? What about people who who were raised by their grandparents? So it's kind of, I don't think intentionally, but very unintentionally dismissive of those forms of love by saying you'll never know until you have your own kid. You know, what about these other moms, these alternative moms?
Well, I think that you and I have enough evidence to say that there is no one size fits all for this. And we have many, many ways to live our lives if only people would let us, you know, and I think that all of these comments, I really think that there's this sense of like what I call maternal inevitability that is so ingrained in our lives that we really don't even see it. Like, we're soaking in it, you know, we just don't see it. It's all around us, and it informs how many of us talk about this and how we think about it. And I really feel like if people took just a little bit of time to think through the logic of it, it's like it doesn't actually make sense. As you say, there are many people caring for children that aren't actually their mothers. There are many ways to nurture that doesn't involve having a baby. I mean, you've got a lot of awesome aunts out there who love being aunts, but would never, never want to be mothers, you know, themselves. And like, I think the aunts of the world are, you know, I'm an aunt. I like being an aunt, but you know, as people say, I like holding my friend's baby and then I like giving it back. So that's the prerogative. But sure, it's not that it's, it's a lovely thing to want to nurture something, and it's a lovely thing to be involved in the lives of children if you want to be, but there's more than one way to do that. And I think we should really think that through. The decision to have a kid is a really major life decision, and we should be able to think about this in a way that's not sort of steeped in this kind of fetishization and mythology and sexism, frankly, and ways and the tools to make that choice when we've made that decision. So, you know, that's my little.
Well, I actually didn't finish my question because I personally got off on a tangent. That was my fault. In your research and interviewing different women, you know, obviously I would never blatantly, unless I knew you pretty well, come up to you and say, hey, Teresa, tell me about your sex life. Who did you have sex with yesterday? What position did you do? Yet people feel that they can go and tell you about having kids and tell you about your reproductive rights and tell you about, you know, something that's so personal as having children, which is also related to your sex life and reproductive rights. You know, where does that come from? Have you seen or heard any kind of clue to why it's socially acceptable for me to aggressively tell you what to do with your life and your reproductive rights?
I don't know why it's socially acceptable. I will say, though, you know, my last film was about the mythology and sort of misogyny around virginity culture. And, you know, in that, too, I mean, if we're talking about sex, I think that, you know, people feel like they have a lot of license to come and tell you what they think of your sexual choices, whether they know what they are or not, you know, or your sexual history. So I think that, I don't know. I don't know what it is. I think people just feel like they can just sort of comment on anyone who seems to that person to not fit into their idea of what someone's behavior should be. If I'm behaving in a way that is outside somebody else's sort of mainstream idea of it, I think people feel like they can sort of tell me that I'm wrong and I need to, you know, clean up my act. The only thing I can say, which is a theme that I feel like I, you know, I return to a lot, is that a lot of this is kind of baked into everything we see and hear in the media, for example, or sometimes what we are told in our houses of worship or what we're told in our peer groups, you know, that there are like very specific ways to live. And if you're not living that way, there's something wrong with you, and you are fair game for someone to, you know, straighten you out. And, you know, when we're talking about sex, it's, you know, being called a slut or being called a prude. I feel like women are just very, very much fair game to be told how they should behave
and how they should live their lives. Yeah.
And how they should live their lives. And, you know, that's sort of a theme in all of my work, actually, which is how do we create our own identities in the face of a society, a larger society that keeps trying to tell us who we are. It's like, stop telling me who I am. I'm going to tell you who I am, you know, and that's really a theme that I just keep going back to over and over again, because, you know, like the question you asked, like, why do people feel like they, you know, that it's their right to tell me how to live my life and tell me who I should love and tell me all about the choices I make.
Yes. And I think that what you're saying is very empowering, because you're encouraging women to seek out their own identity. And anyone, frankly, I don't want to I have a lot of male listeners, and I don't want to I definitely don't want you guys to feel left out, you know. As Teresa said, she did interview some men and there's many men I know that don't want children as well. So I think that's important that anyone to create your own identity and not to just fall in with the crowd. And so I think that's a very empowering message that you're encouraging throughout your films. So
yeah, I feel pretty strongly about it. And, you know, just to speak to the men in your audience, I think this is very much a topic that affects them as well. Right now, in terms of people I've interviewed for the film, there are at least two couples, one of whom is a heterosexual couple, and they talk a lot about how The woman of the couple never wanted kids, and her husband, I think, would have been happy having kids, but has decided that he is happier with his wife, you know, and that's the more important relationship. So I think that in any couple, if, and that's not just straight relationships, but one person may want kids and one person may not want kids. And that's something, you know, people need to figure out. And it's a conversation that's happening all the time. Mm-hmm. Is negotiating that.
It is, but I also think that it's important to really inform. You know, I want women and men to be informed because there's so many myths. We talked about the who's going to take care of you when you get older. There's a myth that having kids will bring you closer together if your marriage is failing. And that's a huge myth.
Don't do that, everybody. That's not true.
That is not true. And I think Victoria Fleming, who's a PhD, wrote a book called You Complete Me and Other Myths That Destroy Marriages. And she mm-hmm. talks about the different, there's a lot of romantic fantasies people have about soulmates and other things. And you know, this is related to partners, not having kids, where you put certain fantasies that the media, speaking of the media pushing BS on us, and so people end up having these broken marriages because they expect, you know, Cinderella and Prince Charming from the fairy tales, and when they get real people who fart and do other things and sometimes are grumpy and
ladies never fart,
then it turns into our you know, extremely high divorce rate because people are living in La La Land. And one of those myths is, you know, our marriage is broken. If we have a kid, it'll turn it around. Mm-hmm. And that is just a myth.
Yeah, that's a really, really bad reason to have kids, ladies and gentlemen.
Really bad.
But again, you know, and again, people tell me that they get told these things by their in-laws. You know, that like your marriage will be saved. This is real life. I'm sure a lot of your listeners are familiar with this experience of being told by somebody. And again, like we just have to keep going back to this idea that we think that it's like not just natural, but essential that everyone has children. And so if you believe that, and if you've been kind of, you know, indoctrinated into that in some way that you are probably not even realizing, then of course you think a kid is going to fix something because it's natural to have children. And if you marry, you get married so you can have children and have a family, right? So of course, like your family will get better if you have a kid because that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to have a kid. So I think it all comes back to this idea that we are so soaking in this this pronatalism, that all of our thoughts are influenced by that, whether we realize it or not. So yeah, don't have kids to save your marriage.
Do not have, that is a myth. It's scientifically proven, statistically proven. I just want women to have all the knowledge and men to have all the statistics and all the knowledge. And I want them to know their choices. Now, again, I personally, do not want children and don't think it's a good idea. Another myth that women that don't want children hate children, which drives me crazy.
Right.
If you don't want children, you hate kids and you're an evil witch. And I love children. I'm also an aunt as well.
And, yeah. I mean, look, some people don't like children. They don't. I mean, I think about like how when you say that you're a feminist and then you have to very quickly say, but I like men. You know? I think it's like, I don't want kids, but I love children, you know? I think, yes, a lot of people love children. Some people who have children like their own children, but don't maybe like don't like other children. You know, I think that's also true. Many realities can be true at one time. I really like children that I'm related to a lot. The random child on the street, I'm probably not going to notice or care about. You know, some people love babies and they want to hold the baby. Every baby, you know, is amazing. I'm not that interested. I'm sorry. I'm just not, which I think is fine. And again, like there's no like universal way to be.
It is. And I think deciding to have kids or not having kids is, you know, very, very similar to sexuality. Previous to our current situation, people thought you were gay or straight. Now we know there's a rainbow. There's gay, straight, bi, there's people who are trans. There's such a giant rainbow of sexuality. And I think the same thing with having kids. There's people who always knew they wanted to have kids and have that strong motherhood, fatherhood gene. There's people who are on the fence. There's people who adopt. There's people who, you know, love kids, but they don't want their own. There's such a rainbow as well. It's not one or the other. And like you're saying, there seems to be such a very strong indoctrination or a strong cultural phenomenon that most people aren't even conscious to it.
It's like the screaming kid in the restaurant. Like, okay. I'm not annoyed by the screaming kid because I don't have kids. I'm annoyed by the screaming kid because I'm trying to have a nice dinner and there's a screaming kid in a grown-up restaurant. Right? So I'm sure that when there are children who are having a really rough time on an airplane, like, it's not just the people without kids that are kind of like, you know, like, I think the whole airplane is doing that, including people with children. So it's, you know, it's just, again, I stop generalizing, you know, stop generalizing about who I am and what that means.
Mm-hmm. What is
the other big,
oh, sorry.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, what is the most interesting thing that you have learned from all of your interviews and about yourself through this process?
That there is no biological clock that affects all people equally.
So what does that mean?
What that means is that some people really want kids, and some people, when faced with declining fertility, feel like they're on the spot to make a decision about whether to have kids or not, which is a reality of female biology. But there's no biological clock that every, you know, woman has in her body that will eventually go off. My biological clock has never gone off. I have never once felt like, oh, I now have the urge to have children. Never, never felt this. And many people I've spoken to also have never felt this. Some people have felt it and said, I'm putting you on snooze because I actually do not want that life. And I understand that my body is having an argument with me about this, but no, thank you. And there's no such thing as the innate desire to have children. Again, some people really want children and some people really don't want children. And some people are just sort of in between, and live with the ambivalence and, you know, hopefully are able to, on their own, without outside pressure, figure out what they want to do. So this idea of the biological clock and that all women really want children and love children are also really dangerous myths, because if you don't want children, again, someone's telling you there's something wrong with you. You're
broken.
I don't know.
You're damaged.
You're broken. You're damaged.
You're unnatural.
You're unnatural. And that's just a steaming pile of shit. And can I say that on your show?
You can say whatever you want, honey.
Steaming pile of shit. And all it does is make people feel like there's something deeply wrong with them and possibly makes them make choices that are really not the right choices. So, yeah.
What about this crusade against motherhood, supposed crusade? I don't remember. I think it's the Dugar family that have 11 or 20 kids or whatever. They had their reality show on TBS. And any type of, you know, they're claiming that there's a crusade, and a lot of the Christian right as well, that there's, like you said, a feminist crusade against the family, against kids, against women and mothers. Is this just a bunch of hogwash? I mean, it seems like the cultural society is very obsessed with the family to the point of, I can't turn around without seeing something that's promoting motherhood.
So first of all, we're not running out of babies anytime, just in case anyone was worried. That's just, you know, the Duggars are part of this Quiverful movement, which is this very fundamentalist Christian movement that believes you have to have as many children as possible for God and, kind of to build God's army. So they have outrageous amounts of children. And there are people who have sort of kind of quote unquote escaped from those communities and talked about the abuse they've experienced and the, you know, the pressures they've experienced. And it's not a happy place for everybody. We haven't heard from everyone yet, so we don't know. But the idea that anyone who says, I don't want children is a traitor, you know, gender traitor, or traitor to the white race, or traitor to Christianity, or something like that. I mean, you know, feminists are like a really great target. They just, it's like that quote by Pat Robertson, which I'm probably going to mangle, but you know, the idea that feminism encourages women to leave their husbands, kill their children, become witches and lesbians. I'm mangling Mr. Robertson's fine words, but yeah.
Sorry, hubby.
But yeah, I mean, that's just like this just sort of standard demonization of, again, anybody who doesn't want to fall into line. Now they, again, they want, you know, white Christian women to have lots of children. They do not want women of color to have lots of children. So, you know, the state has been playing a major role in deciding who should and shouldn't have children. So they're hand-wringing over, you know, the crusade, excuse me, that hand-wringing over this, you know, alleged crusade against motherhood is really just a crusade against white Christian motherhood for the most part. But that's just, you know, let's just, you know, if somebody says, I don't want to have kids, then let's just turn that into a movement to discourage everyone from having kids. I've read a lot of that on white supremacist websites. This is like one of their favorite songs to sing. What can I tell you? There is no, if there is a movement, if there is a secret back room
where all the, all the feminists gather,
to destroy motherhood. We're just really busy. We have a lot of work to do. There is a movement of people who do believe that the human race should die out. That exists.
Voluntary extinction movement, I believe.
Yes, that's right. The voluntary extinction movement. And it's not an anti-motherhood movement. It's a movement that, you know, believes that, and I hope I'm getting this right, believes that humans have done terrible things to the earth. And the best thing for the earth would be if we just all died out and left it alone.
And they're not advocating murder or anything, for those of you.
No.
Just for those of you who listening, who, because it sounds like a scary name, voluntary extinction movement. But they're just advocating for no reproduction, for environmental protection.
Right. Oh, here it is. I found it. Sorry. Let me Google that for you.
Okay.
voluntary human extinction movement.
Yes.
Phasing out the human race by voluntarily ceasing to breed will allow Earth's biosphere to return to good health.
I actually have heard of that.
Yeah. So that's a thing, but that's very different than the anti-motherhood crusade that we are all allegedly planning in a room somewhere that I was not invited to.
I was not invited either. unfortunately, we have to wrap up soon, but I do have a few more questions for you. Do you explore, or would you be interested in exploring at all in your film, the role of, I think you did mention capitalism, but the role of capitalism mm-hmm. in kind of brainwashing people to become mothers, the consume, produce consumers, we need more consumers, we need more mm-hmm. consumption, you know, is that at all explored in the upcoming documentary?
So I can tell you that documentaries kind of get made in the editing room. So I explore a lot of different avenues and talk to a lot of different people. And I'm very curious about all aspects of this. What ends up in the final film,
I who knows?
can't even predict at this point. But yeah, I mean, I'm going to spend time talking about pronatalism. And pronatalism is this, you know, movement or philosophy that includes capitalism as one of its concerns. And we want to have more consumers.
Bye, baby, bye.
Not just of, you know, I mean, the industry for babies and for new parents. I mean, there's like this crazy, crazy multi-billion dollar industry just to sell new parents stuff. So you can believe that those people really want people to have lots of babies. They're not doing anything to dissuade.
I know. There's like $400 baby seats and $700 strollers and other insane my friend just had a baby and she is going consumer crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. So that's definitely an industry.
The fertility industrial complex, as I like to call it, is also a multi-billion dollar industry.
Is that in vitro? In vitro?
Yeah. I mean, just, you know, and you know, that IV has helped a lot of people, including dear friends and family of mine who really wanted children and were able to have them through various procedures. But I mean, that's a multi-billion dollar industry. And I found some crazy advertising campaigns which play on all of those bingos. you know, like don't wait too long, become a family, you know, things like that. And so it's in their interest too for people to have lots of kids. There are a lot of agents here, you know, that are just in, it is in their own capitalist or nationalist or whatever interest to just encourage people to have lots of kids. So yeah, capitalism is huge. They are all contributing to the maternal
baby
inevitability.
Yeah,
they're all helping us feel that motherhood is mandatory and inevitable. Yeah,
I definitely hope that's included. I think that's a really important. Again, I want all people considering kids to think about these things. Think, and be a free thinker before you make a decision. One final question, and then we will talk about the Kickstarter and other things to support mm-hmm. this amazing documentary. Have you done any research into the psychology? There's a school of psychology that says if you have an inner child that is not healed, you will want to procreate to project all of your unresolved issues onto that child, which is why I initially said I think a lot of people have children for selfish reasons that they're not even aware of are selfish.
I'm not that familiar with it, but it's fascinating. It's not something that I've explored. So I don't know.
Well, something
I
to
can't
think
speak
about.
To that. It's something to think about. I can't speak to that right now because it's not an area that I've delved into yet. But I think, you know, we have a lot of different people in the film, and in some ways, some of that is guided by their own stories. Mm-hmm. So it may.
We'll see.
It may happen. We'll see.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this Kickstarter. You're trying to raise money. You're trying to get it completed. What part of the film is completed? How much money do you guys need to raise? Anything we can do to support you?
So we're in the middle of shooting. We've done a lot of shooting. We have a really cool trailer that you will see all kinds of stuff that we've already done, but we have a lot more shooting to do. And we have a lot of stories to tell that are not in the New York area where I'm based. So we have to do a lot of traveling. It would be a really boring film if everything was like New York. So we have to travel to several places in North America to talk to people. And so all of that costs money. And so we're looking forward to finishing our production in the spring and then starting to edit in the summer and fall. We really hope this Kickstarter will get us through all of our shooting and get us well into the edit. And we're applying for grants. We've got all sorts of other things we want to do to raise the money we need for the film, but we need to get started by getting all our shooting done. And that's really what the Kickstarter is about. It's helping us to finish shoot and start to edit. And that will put us in really, really good shape for some other great opportunities for raising money. So, almost 4,000 people have, you know, written in with their own experiences. Everyone I meet who's interested in this topic is like, oh, I'm so glad you're making this film. And I say to everyone, we can't make this film unless we have the money to make the film. And so that's why I would love everyone to check out our Kickstarter, to support us in any way you can. If you've got some money, we would really like it. And we have cool rewards to offer you for your backing. If you are broke, can't afford it, just share the Kickstarter with your groups. Word of mouth is super valuable to us too. So that's the pitch.
We will have the link up. We're releasing this podcast in conjunction with the link Kickstarter campaign. So the link is not available at date of this recording, but we will have it on the website, outoftheboxpodcast.com. If you guys want to support Teresa, you said the survey is still up at trixiefilms.com?
No, it's up at the film's website, which is myselfishlife.com.
Okay, so guys, go on there. If you have your own story about not wanting to have kids, being pressured to have kids, anything childless, child-free, go on there and support her in this amazing work. Before we wrap up, I did a lot of research for this podcast, Teresa. I'm very passionate about this topic. So it sounded like we agreed on a lot of things and you also disagreed with me on some things, which is fine. You're your own person. But I do want to list some of these statistics for my listeners who are on the fence about having kids. There is a strong environmental impact, according to a Lund University in Sweden study. By not having a kid, you save 58.6 tons of CO2 being released into the air. So if you're an environmental advocate and you're worried about global warming, according to Lund University, having a child is the most single destructive thing you can do for the environment. Ooh, sounds very scary.
It does sound scary. That that study, which I think The Guardian also reported on, was something that we talked about a lot on our Facebook page.
Awesome.
Yeah, so it's a conversation that comes up a lot about environmental impact of having children. That's so, yeah,
big,
something
big.
To talk about.
A couple more statistics. UK, in the UK Open University study, one of many, 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 many studies. I actually Googled the study and I found 5 or 6 pages of Google that I went through and I just decided to quote one study. There is also another stereotype that if you have kids, you're happier. According to this study, if you're childless, you're happier. Also, another 2015 American Journal said that having a baby is ranked as one of the most stressful events of a person's life. They interviewed parents and they ranked it as stressful as having a divorce, being unemployed, or even the death of a partner. Ooh, that sounds really scary.
This has been a public service announcement from Out of the Box.
From Out of the Box podcast. And again, genetic issues. I think someone who decides not to have kids for fear of passing on genetic issues is one of the most selfless things you can do. Anyone who has suffered with, you know, autism, mental illness, mental disorders, genetic disorders, knows how truly painful it is to deal with. And I commend those people who know about those medical illnesses that they have and decide not to have children to protect their future kids from that suffering. I think that's absolutely awesome. The other statistics I already went through during the podcast. So I did a lot of research. I think this is a really awesome topic.
I was thinking, like, wow, do you always do this much research for podcasts?
I'm really impressed. I never do research.
So impressed.
I actually never do research for my podcast because, as you can see, I just kind of organically ask questions. And typically when I interview people, I like to know as little about them as possible so that we can have a very organic conversation. And I and just kind of, you know, what comes up. But I think this topic is too important. It's very, very important. You know, we're overpopulated, 7.5 billion people, and we cannot let our other people control us, you know, the media. The mainstream media, other people's opinions. Like I said, in many, many, many of those articles of women regretting having kids, the number one reason they cited was they didn't feel they had another choice or they were extremely pressured into doing it. Mm-hmm. And that is just not the reason. There's only one reason in this entire world to have kids, and that's because you're in a loving and committed situation, or you're in a situation, maybe you're a single mom and you just want to adopt a kid, but you have a strong support system. And that you just want to raise a person and you want to give them love and care for them and support them, not to hold together your broken marriage, not to, you know, get someone back. You know, I know of a woman who had a kid to get her ex back. That's not a reason.
It's not a reason.
You know, we're overpopulated. There's so many emotional burdens. Again, I applaud the men and women who decide to bring loving, supported children into this world. I do applaud them. But if you're doing it for one of the many, many, many other reasons, you know, because you're peer pressured, because you think it's just the thing to do, because you know, whatever XYZ, it's not a good reason. So I think, Teresa, you're doing God's work. You know, I'm not a by putting this film out so people can become educated, informed, and empowered. You're really empowering men and women to make to see another point of view.
And also, I want people to see people living their lives, happy, fulfilled lives that don't happen to involve their, you know, children that they've had. So I think that's just role model folks who have gone through this decision process, have been in various circumstances, and here they are living their lives.
That's awesome. Yeah.
That's it.
And I just want also to make one more comment to the listeners who think, you know, you two women don't have kids, you don't know what you're talking about, blah, blah, blah. Guys, a lot of the information that I got for this podcast and the number one reason I decided to have kids was actually from other parents. So I don't, you know, giving me their information, and a lot of parents, unfortunately, regretting having kids and telling me their experiences, and other parents I know complaining about people who are careless parents or selfish parents or bad parents. So this is not just, you know, two feminists talking about something they don't know about. I'm a lot of my information, I'm sure a lot of your interviewees for the documentary would have similar life experiences where they're making very valued decisions based on a lot of facts, a lot of decisions, you know, sometimes just like you said, just not wanting to have kids because you just don't want them. But there's also other very, very good reasons. So mm-hmm. guys, go on outoftheboxpodcast.com. There's a link to the Kickstarter. Please, please donate money to this very important documentary. Teresa, thank you for your time. And thank you for being a guest on our show.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed this conversation.
Thank you. This has been Out of the Box Podcast with Rosie Tran.